Welcome back to the Peter Mac Show. Thanks for tuning in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're beginning our second hour here with my special guest, Alan Schaefer, president of the Alliance for the Separation of School and State. You can email me at any time at peter@petermacshow. And, of course, we want you to visit the website for the Alliance of Separation of School and State, and that is simply schoolandstate.org. Let me make sure that folks have our phone number, too. We had one call from Jeff in Vermont. You can call us anytime if you have some feedback or questions for myself or Mr. Schaefer. And that number is 800-313-9443. Okay, let me repeat that, 800-313-9443. Alan, just before the break, you mentioned the agenda of Bill Gates and you know, the power that he, with his wealth, has to influence people and the seduction of power and so forth. And I think it's a parallel concern of yours with that would be that big business, contrary to what many people think, is not necessarily always in favor of free enterprise. Big businesses often use lobbyists and so forth to try to cultivate influence with the government to give them a particular advantage in a particular area. And that's unfortunately not a part of capitalism or free enterprise, which is, of course, part of the idea of a free society where people can simply interact freely. And I think a lot of people miss that. And so they might be somewhat surprised to hear you talk about Bill Gates and Microsoft exercising that kind of influence, you know, over the school day and the length of the school year and so forth. But to me, it's not really surprising because big business often uses government to their advantage or to promote their agenda.
Yes, if we think that the ability to receive a check from the government at our neighbor's expense for school, for any other social program or handout, is very great on the individual. Think of the seduction of the ability to gain a political power advantage through your alliance with the government. And that's precisely what protectionism of all kinds and what much of the lobbying influence in Washington is. Some of it, of course, has to do with lobbying to protect an actual right to
sure,
to do business against someone else's claim against you, but
sure,
most of it has to do with gaining an advantage that the existence of power affords you that otherwise you have to fend for yourself to get.
Right. And you know, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, G.K. Chesterton did a fantastic analysis of the twin difficulties of the modern world. He called them Hudge and Gudge. One was big business, and the other one was big government. And how they are similar in respect of how they subjugate people under their influence. And one is the influence that is theoretically afforded through voluntary interaction and monetary exchange, and you know, exchange of goods. The other one does it at the power of a barrel of a gun. But if you actually look at them, they often are very similar.
Right. Stay with us, folks. We'll be back here in just a few minutes. Hang with us.
Catholic priest calls on Catholics and Christians to resist an unjust attack against Iran. Father John Martinez, a Catholic priest, speaks out to declare the Catholic Church's true teaching, that it would be a mortal sin for Catholic soldiers to attack Iran. In a one-hour lecture, Father John Martinez warns about the Zionist plot to rule the world and to use the United States to ignite the flames of World War III by its satanic plan to unjustly attack Iran. He exposes that George Bush is a Zionist and how Congress is controlled by the Zionists. Father John Martinez gravely warns of nuclear weapons being used by the United States and the threat of the possible end of the world. For additional information on how you can help stop World War III, order Father John Martinez's CD entitled An Unjust Attack on Iran, available for $10 by Father John Martinez. Just go to www.republicbroadcasting.org and click on our web banner for the address.
I found this company online, and they had this really unique variety of salt wellness products. I read some of the articles and ended up ordering this beautiful salt lamp. According to the company, they said that the salt crystal lamps gently purify indoor air. I was so amazed. I put it in the baby's room, and it made a perfect nightlight. Both my husband and I could tell the difference.
SoleWellness.com is a unique company that offers salt wellness products from around the world.
So, I went back to the site and ordered their Soleil Simple Natural Cleaning Products, also made with Himalayan salt. I figured it would clean really well. The natural cleaning products worked wonderfully, and there was no scent. This company has so many products my whole family can enjoy and feel better with. Plus, the service was great.
If you're interested in natural, homeopathic, time-tested remedies, visit SoleilWellness.com. That's S-O-L-A-Y Wellness.com. Or call 312-224-2710. 312-224-2710.
Hi, Steve Shank, Fearless Task Force. The J. Michael Stevens Group is shipping a lot of storable food. It's smart that you're getting going at your food supplies. 1 week after the report came out that the world had eaten more food than it produced last year, the country turned into a deep freeze, wiping out a huge part of the new crop. An example? In 24 hours, clementine oranges doubled in price. If you intend to start or finish your supply, call immediately. When you call, tell them how many adults and how many years of food you need. When there are shortages, missing items will be substituted, maintaining the quantity of food necessary. Money is not the problem. Availability is. Be careful. When food supplies get short, with no future, many retailers ship real trash to supply you. For safe food you can trust, call 800-409-5633. On the web, efoodsdirect.com. 800-409-5633.
Welcome back to the Peter Mac Show and the Republic Broadcasting Network. You can give us a call here at 1-800-313-9443 if you want to speak to me or Mr. Schaefer, president of the Alliance for the Separation of School and State. Alan, recently the president of our university asked faculty to contact their congressman because there was some movement afoot in the U.S. Congress to curtail monies that are made available to students in higher education, loans and grants and that sort of thing. And of course, I oppose that. But unlike the states, there's no constitutional provision whatsoever in the United States Constitution for the federal government having any involvement. Now, of course, you and I agree on principle. The states at any level shouldn't be involved. And that's, of course, the purpose of your organization. But constitutionally, there is no basis in the federal government whatsoever. And I wrote her an open letter in the student newspaper citing various aspects of the Constitution and various Supreme Court rulings supporting my case. And she never even bothered to respond. And I think this is indicative of the problem that we face among people, even the so-called intellectuals, in this case, the president of a university, who just can't even imagine the idea that the government shouldn't be involved in education, whether it's from a principal position or from a constitutional position at all. And so when they're shown this evidence, sometimes they're just, in this case, she was literally speechless. She had nothing in writing to say in response to that. And a few people commented on that. And when I brought up, why didn't she respond? It's an open letter. And they said, Peter, you nailed her to the wall. She couldn't respond. And I think that's what we need to do. We need to show that when we present this argument in a solid, clear fashion, that the other side really has nothing to say. They have nothing but empty rhetoric at the best. And hopefully people like Jeff, who called in the previous hour, will find support among other people in his area and nationwide and realize that when you get down to the essence of this argument, who should control a child's mind? Should the parents have control over that as the child matures until the child is old enough to make his or own decisions, or should the state? That's the essence of the argument, isn't it? And if you can nail these people down and say, what is your position on that argument, they fall apart, I think.
Yes. You know, let me get to the root of something that I think relates to this. This whole issue of, for instance, Bill Gates' money and whatnot is very complex. I don't pretend to say that it's simple, and I'm certainly not saying that, you know, there aren't many good entrepreneurs and capitalists involved in business at all. I don't mean to be saying that, but it is very complex, and the seduction is very real, and we've pretty much wholesale accepted the terms on which business is done, and we use them to our benefit, even though they participate in this control structure. But fundamentally, what's going on? I really think the bottom line is visible in, for instance, looking at Bill Gates himself, who dropped out from college to become a rich man.
Right.
And now his rhetoric indicates that we need fewer people to drop out from the system in order to provide the worker bees in the system. There's an inconsistency there.
Sure.
I want to jump over to the government system with that sense of the complexity and the entanglement that we've gotten ourselves to. If we have dumbed down and dulled the sensitivity and the thought process of the population, then we're going to get little response, just like your letter got no response from your college president. It's going to fall on deaf ears for many, many people. The road back is going to be slow and gradual, and it's going to be paved by and with you and me. The people who do understand need to do what's right. So the people who don't understand eventually begin to see the connectedness and the value and the rightness of that. I will balloon this up one more step to the principle on which our government is founded. There is a simple reason why there is so much government and so much dependency, and that is we've been taught to accept it.
Right.
What's the antidote? We have to unlearn it. And right. And I don't think there's a single solution to that. If we were to today abolish government school, I think in many ways that would be an absolutely fabulous thing, and I think that there would be a way in which people would figure out what to do, just like people recover from a war zone, like, you know, Köln, Germany after the war or whatever. Sure. Just demolished, leveled, and yet they found a way to bring their culture back and to live again. We could do that, but it's destructive. Mm-hmm. In the meantime, I think what we can all do is find a way that we can be constructive. And this is the principle of government that I think we need to keep in mind in order to construct the future in the right direction. There are only two alternatives in government, and that is you will govern yourself or you will be governed.
Mm-hmm.
Our form of government is founded on people who own themselves, who have full possession of mind and volition, who know what is right and do it on principle, who are willing to debate principle with each other with passion and fire, not who are willing to set aside those things we disagree about so we can teach in common what we believe in common.
Right.
These are crucial ideas, and we need to grow people who are willing to return to a republican government where certain mm-hmm. things are taken for granted and given by God, that are written down for the common understanding, that aren't up for grabs, and the other things are held to by a populace who is the independent, unvested check on government. That's as opposed to a democracy wherein anybody who has enough of the chips can control the rest.
Right.
And in which more and more will be handed off to government, because when the people figure out, I think it was Thomas Jefferson said, watch out when the majority of the people who can vote aren't property owners, and they figure it out, because they will find a way to vote to take away the property of the property owners.
Right.
Or a short way of saying it is democracy falls apart when people figure out they can vote themselves a check.
Right, exactly.
When that occurs, the principled response to government breaks down and the democratic get what you can takes over. We need to return one individual at a time to the truth of how we should behave so that gradually an infrastructure is built that can sustain the loss of a bad institution of government school and thrive instead of being destructive and then having to recover from it. We need to be building the future now, and that's you and me doing it. No institution is going to do it for us.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, and you mentioned democracy there, Jeff, and I've written the president on that issue too, and we constantly hear about, you know, creating democracies in the world, in Iraq, for example, and so forth. And very few people are educated enough to know that this country was not founded as a democracy, but as a republic form of government, as you said. I prefer to think of it as a constitutional republic. And democracy is simply rule by the masses. I think Benjamin Franklin said democracy is two wolves and a sheep deciding what to have for dinner. People need to understand the essence of what government is, and then they'll understand that how bad it is to have government running your schools when they understand what the essence is. We have a formidable challenge in front of us, but I think more and more people are, you know, finding out the truth, and people like Jeff, who, if I detect from his voice and his concern, felt sort of isolated up there in Vermont. But there are a lot of people on Jeff's side, and they might not be physically in his area, but there are a lot of people that understand what Jeff understands. And through the internet and other means, we can collectively support one another and help spread these ideas and debate people vigorously on these ideas, as you said, and not simply teach what is common to everybody. I forgot the exact phrase you said. What was that about?
Teach in common what we believe in common.
Teach in common what we believe in common.
The principle is really simple. The way that the school operates is what we call in philosophy a reductio ad absurdum. It is the idea that we have to subtract from public arena those things which cause conflict. And when you have only one mechanism in charge, the government, then you have to do that. Now, what if we had that for pizza or for beer or anything else? If we subtracted from all shelves everything that had any controversy, we would be provided the most blah, the most terrible, the most short-supplied, the most high-priced, and the most inconvenient possible product for what we do. The opposite is true in a lively, vibrant society of entrepreneurship and responsibility. There will be a mushrooming of options, and they will coexist, and they will exist for the benefit of all, rather than having one size fits all. So the believe in common what we will teach in common what we believe in common is a truncating of truth. It's a truncating of human existence, and it was designed as a subtraction of the key element about which people were willing to disagree, and that is religion. It was designed to subtract religion from public arena.
Right. And there's no way, is there, Alan, that you can embrace all the religions. I mean, people are striving now. We have all this political correctness in the school. You can't call it Christmas holidays. It has to be winter break because you can't, you know, let Christianity be the dominant religion. And I understand that. And so you have all these multifaceted religions, and people don't understand. There is no way to have a school satisfy all those differing religious beliefs. They just cannot coexist. The only solution is to let people who want to have their kids have religious upbringing, to have a school where that particular religious view is infused in the curriculum, and people who want to have a secular school system have that, and people who want to have a Christian, I mean, they can exist, you know, side by side, as long as they're voluntary. But if you try to mix it all together, you get, I think Marshall Fritz used this word, Alan, actually, you get this thin gruel, which there's really no substance because you're trying so desperately hard not to offend any particular religious view.
Unfortunately, it's actually deeper than that, I believe. And that is that it's intentional to be sure that nobody actually has a deeply religious view.
Wow.
It's intentional to undo the idea of deep fundamental conviction that causes conflict. You can see this in the definition of the word tolerance. Might make a good topic to talk about.
Right. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Stay with us, folks. We'll be back with Alan Schaefer in just a minute.
Catholic priest calls for Christians to resist unjust war. It is an established historical fact that the Vatican has publicly stated that the Iraqi war is an unjust war. However, it miserably failed to tell its Catholic soldiers that it is a mortal sin to attack Iraq. The Protestant ministers in unison should take the logical step of telling their soldiers that it is a serious offense against God to participate in this unjust war. However, if enough Protestant ministers do not take this logical step, then the lay Catholics and Protestants have a serious obligation to demand of their clergy to take this logical step publicly.
Personally, I am doing all that I can to stop the continuation of the murder, carnage, and suffering that is being committed against the innocent people of Iraq in this terrible, unjust war. For additional facts regarding this grave matter, order the lecture by Father John Martinez entitled WW3 Can Still Be Prevented. Just go to www.republicbroadcasting.org and click on our web banner for more information and ordering.
All right, employees, listen up. Our group health insurance premium just went up again. In fact, it's doubled in the last 4 years, and now we've been forced to try something new. So we're increasing the annual deductible from $500 to $2,500. Okay, cut the moaning. The good news is you'll all still only have to pay your regular $500 deductible. The company is installing a new health reimbursement arrangement, or HRA plan, that will pay up to $2,000 in benefits only to those employees who have deductible expenses. This new HRA plan is saving us a lot of money.
Employers all over the country are discovering how to roll back insurance costs using Core Documents' HRA concept. Core Documents is the nation's primary source for affordable plan documents required by the IRS and Department of Labor for Section 125 and HRA plans. Use your insurance agent and let Core Documents help you with plan design. Do a Google search for Core Documents or see us at coredocuments.com. That's Core, C-O-R-E, documents, plural, .com.
Wow, that coffee smells really good.
Hey, it's terrific, and it's healthy.
Healthy coffee. How does it taste?
Well, since healthy coffee blends are pre-brewed from organic Arabica beans, they're delicious.
Gosh, I had no idea coffee could be healthy.
Yeah, this coffee boosts your immunity, has 165 antioxidants for all kinds of health benefits. Plus, it gives you energy without a lot of caffeine. And since you're a big coffee drinker, I thought, well, maybe you'd want to know about it.
It sounds great, but how much does it cost?
Well, not much at all, really. A whole lot less than we've been paying for ordinary coffee at the coffee shop.
Wow. I'd love to try it, and I bet everyone at the office would, too. Where do I get some?
Just call toll-free, 866-222-3017. Or you can go to coffeeking.biz. Ask for a sample when you're there, or get set up as a preferred customer with a 25% discount. I did.
Okay, that's toll-free, 866-222-3017, or coffeeking.biz. I'll do it now. Thanks.
Welcome back to the Peter Mac Show and the Republic Broadcasting Network. If you want to give us a call, the lines are open here at 800-313-9443. You can always email me at any time at peter@petermacshow.com. Well, Alan, just before the break, you were talking about your belief that the system is designed not only to tolerate all these different religious views by having something that offends no one, but they were actually designed to snuff out deep religious conviction. And you were going to talk about tolerance, I think.
Sure. First, we'll give a little brief history of how this common school concept was so fiercely and passionately argued by Horace Mann. Horace Mann was a Unitarian Universalist who had been brought up Calvinist, and while watching his brother being buried by the Calvinist preacher, he became viciously against the message of Christianity. And the reason was that this preacher was essentially saying in his sermon that this his brother was going to hell, and he was unsaved. And this was intolerable to Horace Mann, and so he became essentially a universalist, Unitarian Universalist. By itself gives us some insight to what's going on. But there's another thing going on during that time that you have to understand it to understand how we got in this mess. During the time when Horace Mann was arguing for the schools, in the Boston area against the Boston Masters, who were the schoolmasters of the time. His argument was based partly on the children who didn't go to school. But at that time, it was less than 10% of the population of children who were eligible to go to school at the time weren't going to school. This is privately provided school. Mm-hmm. In some cases, a local community would pay a schoolmaster altogether and allow their children to go to it if they didn't have the ability to hire a tutor or what have you. But they were being schooled. Horace Mann's solution was not to provide for that 10% or less. His solution was to force all children to go to a common school. Why? Mm-hmm. Well, in order to understand that, you have to understand something called the Philadelphia Bible Riots and the history behind that, which was a tremendous influx of poor Catholics coming in from Ireland and Italy. And the Irish Catholics in Philadelphia got into and the Protestants got into brawls, and then ultimately they moved to the Catholics moved to Boston. And this disagreement between Catholics and Protestants was the basis on which Horace Mann could suggest the idea of a common school. Mm. He went to the puritanical Protestant people who had been there for the longest, and he said, look, if we just tell the Catholics they can't have their whole Bible, we'll just teach in common what we believe in common, we'll teach the books of the Bible that, that everybody agrees are in the Bible, then we can begin to sort of water down or Americanize the Catholics that are coming into the country, and they will lose their loyalty to their papal deity or monarch. And that historical backdrop gives the context for we will teach in common what we believe in common. Legally speaking, we see this work out in Supreme Court decisions, etc., where, you know, the government simply can't be in a position of saying, you're okay, we'll fund you both, but you're in conflict with each other.
Right.
They can't do it.
Right.
They have to say, we will solve this problem and make it so it can't happen again, and therefore they continue to reduce what is taught in the schools. Now, the way this worked out, practically speaking, in the government schools, at the very beginning, everybody assumed that they were going to teach from the Bible and going to teach religion. Even Horace Mann knew this would be the case.
Mm-hmm.
But by the time we got to the turn of the century, Jesus as Redeemer was eliminated from all texts provided by state. Mm-hmm. By the 60s, God had been removed from all texts provided by state, all paid-for materials provided by state. And by the present time, the concept of truth has been virtually eliminated. And that gets me to the idea of tolerance. What people don't understand is that we have a concept that governs and guides the behavior of the system and its demands on its adherents, both teachers and children. And that concept is a religious concept in its force, in its vehemence of defense, in its appeal to their demand for conformity. And that concept is tolerance. Now, what most people will associate with tolerance is the idea that, you know, somebody could be wrong, but you need to be tolerant. You need to be accepting or even loving toward people who believe something different than you, even if they're wrong. Mm-hmm. That is not what's meant by tolerance when your child comes home from school today and says, Mommy, I've been learning about tolerance. What that child is being taught is that we must respect and even celebrate those who are different from us.
Mm-hmm.
That you have to necessarily unravel your allegiance to anything that might be higher than someone else's decision of what they will say is true.
Mm-hmm.
So what it is, it's an undoing. This comes from Josh McDowell, who's done some pretty good research on this, and his articulation of it, I think, is very good. He says, hierarchy is what is attacked. The idea that there is truth, the idea that I could know something that you don't or they don't, is attacked directly by the concept of tolerance.
Right. Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a minute, folks. Stay with us.
Found this company online, and they had this really unique variety of salt wellness products. I read some of the articles and ended up ordering this beautiful salt lamp. According to the company, they said that the salt crystal lamps gently purify indoor air. I was so amazed. I put it in the baby's room, and it made a perfect nightlight. Both my husband and I could tell the difference.
SoleWellness.com is a unique company that offers salt wellness products from around the world.
So, I went back to the site and ordered their Soleil Simple Natural Cleaning Products, also made with Himalayan salt. I figured it would clean really well. The natural cleaning products worked wonderfully, and there was no scent. This company has so many products my whole family can enjoy and feel better with. Plus, the service was great.
If you're interested in natural, homeopathic, time-tested remedies, visit SolayWellness.com. That's S-O-L-A-Y Wellness.com or call 312-224-2710, 312-224-2710.
Hi, Steve Shank, Fearless Task Force. Sure, you've got a mortgage and credit cards. Your debt creation is probably the smartest thing you've ever done. How would it be to find $75,000, $150,000, $200,000 or more you never knew you had? Now the Task Force has strategies to make these debts into virtual savings accounts. Ben Franklin said, a penny saved is a penny earned. By doing nothing more than you're doing right now, because you've used your credit, the right strategies can make the debt part of your financial life the smartest thing you've ever done. Oh, by the way, your strategies cost you nothing out of pocket. Go ahead and check out the debt elimination scams if you'd like to. You wouldn't take money from a loan shark, so you may not want to give your money to a debt shark. For an understanding of what a financial genius you truly are, call 800-409-5633. On the web, mydebtfreepath.com. 800-409-5633.
People who use Cartavite know about the pollutants in our body and want them out. For over 5 years, Cartavite has proven itself time-tested. Here's Dr. Mattson, a naturopathic doctor's thoughts on Cartavite.
In our mind, there isn't such a great big mystery to disease anymore. This basic tenet of yeast in the gut and metals in the liver covers at least 70-80% of the diseases that we see. When we do our program, you know, herbal formulas like Cartavite, and you see someone who could barely walk up a hill now going for regular jogs, 2 months later, we know we're doing something right. It's a well-thought-out formula. I mean, the idea of it working on yeast and metals both at the same time and liver function is dead on. You'll find, I think, that it'll work more than just on heart problems and circulation problems. It'll work on other problems as well.
For more information, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit our Cartavite link at rbnlive.com. That toll-free number again, 1-877-928-8822. 8822.
Welcome back to the Peter Mac Show and the Republic Broadcasting Network. Thanks for tuning in here. My special guest with me is Alan Schaefer, president of the Alliance for, the Alliance for the Separation of School and State. The website is schoolandstate.org. We encourage you to visit that website. We encourage you to sign the proclamation. We encourage you, if you're a teacher, to become a school Sakharov, as we explained in the first hour. Alan, just continue then. I know you're not quite done with your discussion about tolerance and so forth.
Well, I think I should just finish it off by connecting how powerful that influence is. We've been talking about the subtraction of God. I want to state that it doesn't matter what you think of God. The issue here is whether you have the right or should have the power to dictate or somehow influence an innocent mind on that topic. If they are not in your direct responsibility, your child,
right.
And when we become an institutionally a dedicated entity like the government school that has no possibility of doing any justice to that concept, we are forcing those young innocent minds into a context that virtually must destroy their sense of God. Now, so let me say this. God, this is what the message of subtracting God is. God is so unimportant, we will not even mention him, not even here and there, but over roughly a contiguous 14,000 hours, mm-hmm. we will not mention God. That's how unimportant God is. Even if you don't end up bumping into a teacher that will outright deny God or try to strip God away from you or question God, or somehow violate a child's, or even directly contradict the parent's idea of that. You just can't overestimate the power of taking an unformed yet partially formed mind and subjecting them to 14,000 roughly contiguous hours of the idea that we can't talk about God. Mm-hmm. And that goes for other things, too. God is not the only victim in this whole formula. I would argue that he's one of the biggest.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly our own responsibility and independence is another. Republic versus democracy is another. But I would say God is probably the biggest. That was the one that the system was designed to militate against by its design from its inception at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody expected it would go this far, but that is the consequences of a bad idea.
Right. Well, I think somewhat connected with that idea is the notion of diversity now. And in my college, and I think other universities across the country, multiculturalism is infused in all of the curriculum. It's not even very well defined, but as best I can tell, it's the idea that all cultures are equally meritorious. And I think it goes along with what you were saying about tolerance. We shouldn't criticize this or that. It's and rather just accept it as different, you know. But it's, to me, the irony in that, Alan, the absolute irony in that is that we are supposed to celebrate diversity of culture and ethnic background and religious views and all that sort of thing, but what we're not allowed to celebrate is diversity of opinion on certain subjects like that. And I think that's evident even at my college. For example, I tried to bring in a speaker who would talk about 9/11 and who believe that the government is behind it and would look at even at the scientific principles embodied in discussing the collapse of the World Trade Centers and Building 7. Regardless of whether a person thought his position was correct, what a beautiful way to come in, have students listen to what he says and critique it, evaluate, and so on. But the administration said, no, we're not going to do that. That we believe this person is anti-government, or they didn't quite use that word, but they believe that his conclusion that the government was involved was clearly, you know, wrong, which they have a right to believe, and they weren't going to allow him to come in and speak, you know, which is their right too. But it's the idea that diversity within a certain range will be celebrated, but outside that, we're not going to discuss that, which is, to me, antithetical to the whole scientific method. I mean, in the notion that we'll get at the truth in a scientific sense, and even in a philosophic sense, is that we'll allow people to voice varying ideas and the truth will emerge from those. We won't tell somebody who has a particular idea that they're wrong. We'll show by logic and evidence that they're wrong in whatever sphere it is. But it seems to me the notion of diversity is one that truncates that and says, no, we're going to talk about diversity among these things, but if you have a diverse opinion, such as you're espousing about the importance of God, that's not going to be part of the discussion.
Yes.
Isn't that interesting?
It's insincere and duplicitous, and it's very scary because it's very much like what we're doing with the gay rights issue. No one, to my knowledge, is saying that we ought to suspend the rights of a class of individuals that consider themselves in some fashion not in alignment with the sexual mores that have been traditionally associated with civil society. No one's suggesting that we should allow rape, pillage, extortion, badgering, etc. on those people. But what is being suggested by the lobby trying to protect and defend them is that we actually discern the motive of the person who might commit such a crime or prior to committing such a crime and prosecute them differently. Okay,
I thought you were talking about hate crimes and so forth a little bit.
Yeah, okay. So I'm going to connect it over.
Okay,
The hate crimes is an example of a double standard.
Mm-hmm.
That says we will not only punish the fact that someone was beat up or murdered or some other thing for the act, mm-hmm. we will treat them differently because of why they did it.
Right.
And so now let's go over to the schools where multiculturalism is the buzzword. It's fundamentally insincere because when you talk about not just Christianity as a religion, but Western culture as a whole,
mm-hmm.
which is what brought us here. It's the Gallup that brung us.
Right.
When you talk about that, the answer is, oh, they've had their time. They can sit down and shut up for now. Mm-hmm. We'll let everybody else have their day because they were oppressed. Mm-hmm. It's a double standard. We're not even talking about equal time. We're talking about a complete usurpation of the controls of who is allowed to say what. Mm-hmm. If you want to say that those controls shouldn't exist and therefore Christians shouldn't be oppressing, you know, some other group, that's fine. But it's been reversed. So now there is a double standard operative. We will apply a different standard to Western culture as a whole and to Christianity specifically than we will to all other cultures, because the other cultures have been denied enough time, and you Westerns have had enough. So you can shut up now.
Right.
That's just staggering when you look at how utterly and completely intolerant and unmulticultural that is.
Right. Exactly. And I approach students in my classroom, Alan, amidst all this multiculturalism, which, at least in my mind, and maybe I'm just naive, is still very much undefined. I mean, exactly what is it that we're promoting with multiculturalism? And I say, I look at each student as an individual. If I can discern something about that student through his or her culture that will help me be a better teacher or he or she be a better learner, then fine. But that's secondary to, in my view, to that person as an individual. And what can I do to help them in the classroom as an individual? And I don't care what color their skin is or where they came from, if I can help them, if they want to bring that and some understanding of that can help me. But the paramount value that I approach is that person as an individual, and secondly, treating them all the same. You know, I cannot give one student an opportunity that is not afforded to another student in my classroom. And to me, those are the basic principles of this country. You know, you have individual rights and you have equal rights. Somebody doesn't get superior rights by virtue of the fact that they're a member of a class, which, you know, whether they're a minority or, you know, a gay person or whatever who has been oppressed in the past for whatever reasons, they don't get special treatment. They get the same treatment. They have the same rights as everybody else.
That's right. What you're seeing operative there, simply speaking, Peter, is the subtraction principle again. The idea that that certain things will be excluded because they conflict violates the very diversity that I should be afforded, the very tolerance that I should be afforded under the equality idea. And now I believe that equality is a useful fiction, applicable in some circumstances and not in others. And the closer we get to a collectivist or a one-size-fits-all system for anything, the worse that formulation gets. But fundamentally what you're talking about with tolerance and diversity is not a proactive program in which we can look for the contents of the program, we can evaluate its fruits as a program, we can critique its goal as a program. It's, again, a subtraction principle. It is to use something that people sort of kind of agree on as good, like the common, we'll teach in common, we believe in common, yeah, math, science, you know, writing, good literature, the Bible.
Right.
We all agree on those things. Back then, they agreed on what they were going to, they already agreed. They had diversity of education and agreed on what they could teach with very few exceptions.
Mm-hmm.
And the action, the operative principle of subtraction is the point of multiculturalism and diversity just as surely as it was for the common school principle that Horace Mann espoused at the beginning of this institution.
Right. Let's take another caller. We have Ron from Montana. Ron, you're on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Go ahead.
Yeah, gentlemen, I just have a comment. I drive school bus up here in Montana. I've been driving, so we retired in 99, but I've been driving for about 5 years. And my wife and I were both born during the Depression and went to school through the 40s and 50s. And then we raised three children. And then I've watched my grandchildren grow up. And the profound change that I've seen in this educational system, it just makes me sick to my stomach. My comment is, I don't see how we're going to be able to change it. They have an agenda. And they're just going to keep coming back. You know, like the hate crimes bill and the gun control, they're just going to keep coming back. And until we take this country back, I don't see how we can And we've got to change it. I see these kids as attitude. I've got 65 kids on my bus. And fortunately, I have a rapport with them. I don't have the trouble that the other drivers have. But I've worked hard at it to have a rapport with these children. Mm-hmm. So,
very good point.
My kids are kindergarten to eighth grade.
Okay.
And I've got 65 kids on my bus.
Wow.
And it's a challenge. But like I said, I have developed a rapport with these kids, and I have very little trouble with them like the other drivers do.
Mm.
But I just wanted to make that comment that I've seen this happen through three generations, and it just makes me sick to my stomach. Our oldest daughter homeschooled her daughter, and she aced the GED test. And she is one sharp little girl. I see more and more kids now being homeschooled out here.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know.
A homeschooler, and I want to just mention that I think homeschooling provides, at very least, a challenge to the idea that this is something that needs experts to solve it. What
right.
it needs is you and me, heart and soul. We can reclaim our own mind and volition. We can become agents of the actual carrying of the torch of freedom, the actual living of the responsibility that is our part of a free society. We can do that, and we can only do that by application of a new kind of subtraction. Subtract our children from the institution, and we will gain an unheard of, unseen, unbeforeseen level of differentiation from the rest of the culture, and that's the start of it. I don't know where it'll end, and I know that many institutional schools are able to produce similar results, but homeschooling sort of is the high watermark. They've proved with the least amount of resources, with the most fabulous success, that we don't need the experts in what they tell us.
Exactly.
So,
Ron, any other comments?
Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to let you know how one Montanan feels about it.
Okay. Thank you very much, Ron. Right. Alan, let me respond to what you just said about not having to be an expert. And now one could say, because I'm a math professor, I'm somewhat of an expert in that field. But nonetheless, what I did was I was a big brother for about 8 years. I was matched with a boy who's had no father, mother of three, single mother, three kids. I only met him on Sundays for about 2 hours a day. We'd go to a movie, whatever, throw the frisbee. And he was C plus, B minus student at best. He was having some trouble in math. So I said, well, let's learn some mental math. In really a couple months of Sundays, Alan, I was able to teach him to add and subtract two-digit numbers in his head, a skill which I claim any person of normal intelligence can learn. And yet I see my students coming in who have graduated from high school, coming to college, who don't have that basic skill. Obviously, they haven't learned it. It's not that they're not capable. And I think this goes to what you said. I think any parent ought to be able to teach their child that kind of skill. But we've labeled schooling as this sort of expertise area, and we need these special experts to do it. Now, clearly, when you get to the higher levels of math or science and even the humanities, you want somebody that might be more skilled in that area. And I guess I would just draw a parallel. I mean, a parent can address certain medical concerns of their child, a scrape, a bruise, a cut, put a Band-Aid on it, kiss it, what have you. Obviously, if the child has a broken bone, you're probably going to seek, expert medical attention from a doctor. Well, I contend that parents should approach education the same way. You can teach them the fundamentals, and when they get to a certain point where they're going to require more expertise, then you can hire that expert or send them to a private school or bring in the teacher with that expert to a bunch of kids who are being homeschooled. I mean, as you said before, the options that will arise in this kind of market are at this point unimaginable. But it's just not that hard for a parent of reasonable intelligence and dedication to provide their parents the kinds of skills that many of the kids that I see graduating from high school and arriving on our shores, as it were, in college, simply don't have.
That's right. Startled by a figure that John Gatto threw out one day. He said that the average intelligence child who has achieved the age of reason can learn reading, writing, and arithmetic in about 100 hours. I met another man who's a wonderful supporter of the Alliance, a Unitarian minister and a professor, and he said that if you give me two sides, a of an index card. I will put the calculus on that, and in one afternoon, I think you said 2 hours, maybe 4 hours, I will teach anybody to do the calculus. Another interesting thing, if you go to any community college today, you take, just picture your average dropout from high school.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a cut up and a slouch and didn't do very good and just said, heck with this and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
The average dropout can achieve a high school diploma in 35 hours. The teacher will tell you that.
What does that
say
about
doing all this?
Right. Stay with us, folks. We'll be back for about the last 10 minutes.
Stand up and be counted. Catholic priest calls for Christians to resist Bush's impending unjust attack against Iran. George W. Bush lied to the world to get the backing of the American people to attack Iraq. Now he is lying to the world to get the backing of the American people to attack Iran. The Catholic and Protestant clergy have failed miserably to come out publicly against the upcoming unjust attack of Iran. Therefore, the lay Catholics and Protestants should demand of their respective clergies to take a righteous public stand against this upcoming Iranian unjust war. Each one of us will render to God a strict account of what each of us did to stop these diabolical tyrants like George W. Bush, who, as roaring lions, go about the world seeking whom to murder. For additional facts concerning this upcoming Iranian unjust war, order the one-hour lecture by Father John Martinez entitled Stand Up and Be Counted. Just go to www.republicbroadcasting.org and click on the web banner for more information and ordering.
Wow, that coffee smells really good.
Hey, it's terrific, and it's healthy.
Healthy coffee. How does it taste?
Well, since healthy coffee blends are pre-brewed from organic Arabica beans, they're delicious.
Gosh, I had no idea coffee could be healthy.
Yeah, this coffee boosts your immunity, has 165 antioxidants for all kinds of health benefits. Plus, it gives you energy without a lot of caffeine. And since you're a big coffee drinker, I thought, well, maybe you'd want to know about it.
It sounds great, but how much does it cost?
Well, not much at all, really. A whole lot less than we've been paying for ordinary coffee at the coffee shop.
Wow, I'd love to try it, and I bet everyone at the office would, too. Where do I get some?
Just call toll-free, 866-222-3017, or you can go to coffeeking.biz. Ask for a sample when you're there, or get set up as a preferred customer with a 25% discount. I did.
Okay, that's toll-free, 866-222-3017, or coffeeking.biz. I'll do it now. Thanks.
I found this company online, and they had this really unique variety of salt wellness products. I read some of the articles and ended up ordering this beautiful salt lamp. According to the company, they said that the salt crystal lamps gently purify indoor air. I was so amazed. I put it in the baby's room, and it made a perfect nightlight. Both my husband and I could tell the difference.
SoleWellness.com is a unique company that offers salt wellness products from around the world.
So, I went back to the site and ordered their Soleil Simple Natural Cleaning Products, also made with Himalayan salt. I figured it would clean really well. The natural cleaning products worked wonderfully, and there was no scent. This company has so many products my whole family can enjoy and feel better with. Plus, the service was great.
If you're interested in natural, homeopathic, time-tested remedies, visit SoleilWellness.com. That's S-O-L-A-Y Wellness.com. Or call 312-224-2710. 312-224-2710.
Welcome back to the Peter Mac Show. Thanks for tuning in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. My special guest here today with me is Alan Schaefer. I was thinking of John Taylor Gatto. Alan Schaefer, who's the president of the Alliance for the Separation of School and State. Alan, we just have about 5 or 6 minutes left. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, go ahead. I have a wrap-up if you'd like.
I'm sorry?
I have a wrap-up thought if you'd like.
Well, okay, sure. We've got 6 minutes, so you can wait to wrap it up, or we can keep talking. Whenever it's appropriate, go ahead.
Well, I have a thought that I want to add in here, and it's a two-sided thought, and I'd like to end, you know, at least end my formal comments this way.
Okay.
People understate or don't understand the importance of this issue. While we're fighting about guns or fighting about NAFTA or fighting about, you know, RFID or what have you, these are all crucial and important issues
Sure.
But you have to understand that as long as the government has the children, anything you and I passionately vote for, donate to, you know, talk about, and actually make changes in, any advancements we make on our areas of passion today will reliably be unraveled and undone in the next generation or two. And a generation is getting shorter and shorter as the government makes, you know, leverages the, you know, peers as being separated from their parents. That unraveling was well known to some very, very important people. Karl Marx from the Communist Manifesto, the education of all children from the moment that they can get along without their mother's care shall be in state institutions at state expense. Adolf Hitler, you may disagree with us now, but who are you? You're going to die, and we have the children who are in our camp right now.
Right.
There is no more important issue than the children, and there's no more dark future than handing them over to the government. On the other hand, I want to say that the most hopeful future we have is in our choice to take responsibility for our children and to teach them to have full possession of their own mind and volition. And anyone listening today that gets a clue of what we're talking about, I hope you will find out as much as possible, learn about why what we're suggesting is true and what we might do about it, and then you can become one of the people that gives hope to someone else. Two people I'd like to quote. Jim Babka. He had a beautiful statement after he just talked about how dismal the situation looked for voting this last November. He says, you know, will your vote be heard? Did you just give a mandate to the wrong side? Everything that you voted for is going to become a lump of vindication to do whatever they want. Well, how does that make you feel? And then he flips it. He says, what happens next always depends on what happens now. It's on you and me, folks, to figure out what we're going to do now that maintains our independence, because you are what stand against the system's encroachment. Joseph Farah was asked, you know, what should we do? It looks so dismal. He said, go out there and convince somebody else. Our job is essentially to be a light for the idea that responsibility, self-ownership, and the future of our children is our hope. And there's always hope in doing the right thing. So that's the comment that I want to finalize what may to many seem like a dismal picture. It's not. It's the beginning of the possibility. If you're getting an inkling, a twinkle, that this might have some truth to explain what's going on out there, chase it down, because it will give you life and hope that is unavailable from the mainstream and from the system.
Beautiful end. Thank you very much, Alan, for being on the show. Let's encourage people to go to schoolandstate.org, sign the proclamation, or as Alan just said, learn about it. You don't have to take our word for it. Learn about it. You know, come to your own decision. I'll be back in 2 weeks, folks. Thanks again for tuning in to the Republic Broadcasting Network, and stay tuned for another show. See you in a couple weeks. Bye-bye.
True, gold and silver.